get yourself a song to sing and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found. Whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now. Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is Jack Rasmus, your host. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today let's talk about some updates to trends and topics we've been talking about here in recent weeks. I'm referring to the trade wars, so-called. Actually, there's two trade wars, one phony and one real. Well, I'll talk about that. And the tax cuts. Oh, the tax cuts are over. What's going on? Well, where are the tax cuts going? Who's benefiting from them? Those are the two updates we want to talk about today. All right, let's jump right into it. Let's talk about where is it going? What is it we're talking about going in terms of tax cuts? Let's talk about tax cuts first. Well, as I've been saying and writing, the Trump tax cuts amount to $5 trillion of tax cuts for investors and businesses and corporations. $5 trillion. $3 trillion net. In other words, the businesses and investors will get $5 trillion. And the rest of us will have our deductions and exemptions and all the details cut. Instead of cutting the loopholes for the rich, they're going to cut the deductions and exemptions for the rest of us, for wage earners, to the tune of $2 trillion. You won't really feel that until next year. You see, they cleverly did this so that the midterm elections, it wouldn't hit. In fact, what they did was reduce your tax withholding here for the first several months, so it looks like you got more money. Oh, those Republicans, you know how slippery they are. And anyway, $2 trillion increase on us, $5 trillion for them, so it's a net $3 trillion. Oh, but they're running around saying it's only $1.3 trillion because they're making all this supply side economic nonsense assumptions that by cutting tax cuts is going to boost GDP by $1.7 trillion. Well, that didn't happen under George W. Bush, and it didn't happen under Ronald Reagan. It's not going to happen under Trump. You see, that's ideology. That's not economic science. That's economic ideology, because there's no correlation even, let alone causation, between business tax cuts and GDP anymore. All right, so enough with that. That's the tax cuts. Well, where is it going? Well, I predicted in my articles, you can read them on my blog or my website, they're going to go, the tax cuts are going to go the same place they went under George W. Bush and Barack Obama. Not going into real investment, i.e. building equipment and plants and structures and so forth, that would create jobs and generate real income for wage earners, which would stimulate consumption. No, no. My analysis of Bush-Obama period is that where did those tax cuts go? And under Bush, of course, remember, it was $3.7 trillion, 80% of which went to investors and corporations and businesses. And Obama just extended that 2 years from 2010 to 12. And then he agreed to $800 billion more. And then he agreed to $5 trillion more in extending the Bush tax cuts for another decade. By the way, as an aside, this Trump tax bill is only supposed to go for 10 years. Ah, but they're already talking about slipping in permanency here in an addendum bill to those tax cuts. That's how they get it passed. They say, oh, you know, it's just temporary, but then they make temporary permanent. Anyway, $3.7 trillion under Bush, $5 to $6 trillion under Obama, and another $5 trillion here under Trump. All right, where's it going? Well, it's going to go the same place it went under Bush. Where was that? It's going into the stock market, into financial assets. It's going into bonds. It's going into derivatives that we don't even know how much. It's going into financial securities, first and foremost. is going into corporations, cutting their dividends, and they're engaging in stock buybacks to the tune of $1 trillion a year under Obama. It's been escalating. The dividend payouts and the stock buybacks have been escalating ever since George Bush. And under Obama, for 7 years or 6 years, it was $1 trillion a year. The corporations take the tax cuts and they pass them through to their shareholders, big time, through dividend payments, increasing dividends, and buying back their stock, which drives up the price of the stock nicely so that shareholders can sell it with a big capital gains. In the meantime, we cut the capital gains tax to 15%, you see. Okay, so it's a big, big scam. It's a big scam, $1 trillion a year scam. Well, I predicted that the Trump tax cuts, you'll see, continued and an increase in dividend payouts and stock buybacks over the $1 trillion already being paid every year under Obama. Well, we're beginning to see some evidence of that. We'll get to that shortly. Yeah, it's going to be way over $1 trillion this year and every year thereafter. While at the same time, the Trump tax cuts ensure we're going to have $1 trillion deficits every year. So, in other words, the $1 trillion deficits are being absorbed by the $1 trillion plus payments and dividends and stock buybacks. Okay, that's where one of the places is going. The other place I've always predicted these tax cuts go is to not just into buybacks and dividend payouts, which result not only in stock and bond price booms, financial asset market booms, but they go offshore. Yes, they take their money and they take it offshore. They don't invest in the US, they invest offshore. Offshore, they invest not just in financial markets as onshore, but they invest in real investment offshore as well. Because the profitability is so much greater to produce your stuff in Mexico or Brazil or Vietnam or someplace like that, China, etc. So where they're doing real investment that creates real jobs, they're doing it offshore. Onshore, all they're doing is popping into financial markets. Okay, so offshore to emerging markets, the money flows by investors, businesses, big tax cuts, into financial asset markets, the money flows into dividend and stock buybacks, the money flows, those three areas. And you know what? Evidence is, as I predicted, that's where it's going again. That's why this so-called boom, this Trump economic recovery, is going to be very short-lived. It's already dissipating, and we'll talk about that. All right, so it's not going into real investment, even though it's boosting US corporate profits 10 to 31%. Mainstream economics argues that if you give more money to corporations, they will then have more disposable income. And as a result, they will be able to invest more. Trickle down is called. And if they invest more, they'll hire more people, and people will have more income, wage income. And they'll spend more on consumption as a result. Well, that's the theory. That's the nonsense. That doesn't exist. That's how they sell it. That's called economic ideology. They sell it that way to everybody else. Okay, so if it's not economic ideology producing the real thing, where does this 10 to 31% profit bump boost from the Trump tax cuts really go? Well, as I said, they go in those other areas, not into real investment. But wait a minute, we got investment going on a little bit here in 2017 under Trump, right? Well, that's the animal spirits being released, you see. Animal spirits refers to, businesses think that there's going to be profits now, even more profits, not just the 31% from the boost in the tax cuts, but now the economy is going to grow and therefore they expand in anticipation of it growing. All right, so there has been some animal spirits, but you know those animal spirits turn off and on like a faucet. And they turned on in expectation of the tax cuts, and they're going to turn off when it's clear that the U.S. economy has begun to slow. Okay, so let's watch that turn off of the animal spirits, i.e. investment. We're going to see that sometime later this year. This Trump investment surge, temporary surge, psychological surge due to animal spirits of investors is going to dissipate real quick, I predict. In the meantime, we already see significant signs across the board of the U.S. economy looking ahead, not at the present, but looking ahead in coming months, already weakening. And the same with the global economy. You see, the U.S. drives the global economy, and because it looked like we had animal spirits and some investment last year, that spilled over to the rest of the global economy. Well, because the U.S. buys up so much from everybody else, called imports, $800 billion a year imports. Right. Okay, so that's a deficit, by the way, $800 billion, and that boosts business and activity and spending anticipation in Japan and Europe and other places around the globe as well. North America, Australia, even China to some extent. Well, last year also the global economy got a boost not just from U.S. animal spirits, but it got a big boost from China. China stimulated its economy last year significantly, in anticipation of the Chinese Communist Party conference and giving President Xi another long-term term in office and everything. Politicians like to have the economy firing on all cylinders before they, quote, get elected. Well, the Communist Party conference is the election process over there. And Xi, of course, got elected, just as Trump gets elected. And they always boost the economy, presidents try to, in the year of the election. China really boosted its spending significantly last year, and that gave a big boost to the global economy. So last year, the global economy appeared to be recovering because of China temporary stimulus. Now they're contracting. All right, China grew 6.8% officially GDP last year. It won't grow that this year. They're already pulling in their horns. And if we have a trade war, the horns will be pulled in even more. So we're going to get less out of China. And if we get less out of China, China pulls up a lot of the emerging markets by buying their commodities. So that's going to slow. The dissipation in the Trump bump here in the U.S. is going to happen later this year. This so-called hype that was rampant last year about, oh, we have a synchronous global economic recovery for the first time since before 2007. Well, that's synchronous recovery is already falling apart. Europe is already back down to flat or near to it. Well, let's look at some of the statistics here about this global economy, synchronous growth last year and what's happening this year. Last year, the global economy grew 3.7%. That's pretty robust, right? The year before it was 3.2%. So, actually a half of a percent. Well, that was China and the US, you see. But that's going away. That's going away very quickly here, I predict by the end of the year, certainly in 2019. You can already see indications. The engine of a European economy, Germany, right? German industrial production is down 1.6% so far this year. Well, that's a shocker. Germany and industrial production drives Europe, and that's always been increasing. Well, now it's contracting for the first time. Let's have a little bit about Europe, the EU. The EU has been trying to stimulate its economy since this double dip recession in 2012-13, following which it hasn't really recovered, very, very little. It's been trying to stimulate it by driving down the value of its currency, the euro, and doing that through what's called central bank quantitative easing. In other words, the central bank buys up bonds and securities, corporate and government, pumps money into the economy in Europe, and that money is supposed to drive down the currency exchange rate and stimulate exports, because Europe is very much, and especially Germany, dependent upon exports to drive its GDP, less so, I mean, far more so than the United States. Okay, so QE, pumping all that money into the economy by central bank European Central Bank Chair Mario Draghi, right, was supposed to drive down the currency. Well, you know, it did for a while, and then it hasn't. It's been very ineffective in that sense. And most of the ECB bond buying has been from the stronger countries and economies in Europe, Germany, France, and so forth, whereas the periphery of Europe needs their bonds bought more. But they're only buying good bonds, you see. And the most important thing is all that money being pumped into the European economies is being redirected from Europe to the U.S. They're investing in the U.S. They're investing in U.S. stock market. They're investing in U.S. corporate bonds. They're buying U.S. corporate bonds, the European investors and corporations. They're not buying Europe. They're buying the U.S. And, of course, that drives up the U.S. stock market and keeps floating U.S. corporate bonds. The fastest rising share of U.S. corporate debt globally is from European investing in U.S. corporate debt and U.S. government debt as well. That's because their interest rates in Europe have been driven down to zero and negative. So they're not going to take their money and invest in European securities. They're going to take that money and invest and higher U.S. interest rates, and U.S. corporate bonds, and even U.S. government debt, treasuries. The money's flowing out of Europe as fast as Draghi can pump it in. It's flowing out of Europe to the U.S. and to some extent to Asia. That's why Europe can't really recover. You see, it's a global economy, and you just can't assume that putting money in your economy, central bankers, is going to necessarily result in growth in your economy, because it's a global economy and it's totally financialized globally, and the money will just flow right out to greater profitability somewhere else in the world. Well, that's what's happened in the U.S., as I've said, since 2008. You know, $4.5 trillion of U.S. QE float into financial markets in the U.S. and globally, float out to emerging markets globally. And the same thing's happening in Europe now. The money being pumped into Europe by its central bank is flowing out of Europe, is flowing to the U.S. for higher yields. And that results, of course, in rising debt being held, both government and corporate debt, being held by Europe, fastest growing area. You think of, well, who are the big holders of U.S. debt, treasury debt? China, over $1 trillion. Japan, over $1 trillion. But now the fastest growth area is Europe. And that's because of this arrangement I talked about, QE, pumping money into the economies and flowing out of the intended economy, you know, the home economy, where it's Europe or the U.S., to elsewhere in the world. Okay, so this whole so-called synchronous growth spurt has already come to an end in Europe. You can see the weakness in the global economy emerging by the decline in copper prices. Why are copper commodities and copper prices so important? Well, because copper is used in all kinds of equipment and engineering and machinery and so forth. And if copper declines, less demand for copper, that means there's less planned investment in real assets and machinery going on. So copper prices are declining. Europe has stalled already. Asian manufacturing, you know, of course, manufacturing, Asia is a major hub of manufacturing growth. And, China manufacturing is even greater than the U.S. Well, certainly all of Asia is, when you put it together. Well, if you look at Asian manufacturing indexes, 21 of the 30 Asian countries, manufacturing is flattening and declining. 21 of 30 major countries over there. Oh, wait a minute. Oil prices are rebounding now globally. Well, that's speculation. You know, see, oil prices aren't because of supply and demand of oil, only in the very long term, but these short-term fluctuations, volatility in prices are simply speculators driving up the price of oil on spot markets. That's all it is. It's not an indicator that the economy is really growing and therefore there's going to be a shortage of supply. And so, in other words, the rising price reflects growing economic activity and need for oil. No. It's all about speculation on spot markets and other markets. Because oil is a financial security. It's not just a commodity. You see, ever since 1999, we've turned it into a oil futures financial asset. So that speculation up and down drives the price of oil up and down. Okay, so oil is not an indicator of growth in the economy, oil price hikes. What is an indicator is what's going on in Germany and Europe and Asia now. And that means we're going to have a decline or a slowdown in this global economic GDP economy. There will be a slowdown going on here in 2018. So this whole synchronous growth, global growth, is coming to an end already. Well, let's look at the U.S. economy. Right? We looked at the global economy here broadly. And in the U.S. economy, here's some interesting facts, right? In 2017, U.S. GDP grew by 3%. Fastest growth in decades, again, because of the animal spirits, temporarily. In 2018, the forecast is 1.9%. And I believe it's going to go lower, which means we're right back to the slow growth Obama period, where GDP really grew, between 1.5 and 1.7 or 8%. All right, we're right back where we were. We got one little year, 1 year of a Trump bump here, 2017, as the animal spirits were released in anticipation of the big corporate tax cuts, which they got. Now they got them, and the tax cuts aren't going to go into real asset investment. They're going to go where I said, financial markets, stock buybacks, dividend payouts, emerging markets, etc. And we're going to see a lesser even. Well, we're back to the Obama slow growth, 1.5 to 1.7% this year. You'll see. Okay. Well, what are some of the other negative factors about U.S. growth behind that slowdown to 1.5 to 1.8%? What are some of the indicators here? Well, retail sales, 3 months in a row, slowdown. Contracting 3 months in a row. For the first quarter, retail sales, 0.2%, virtually no growth. Retail sales have stalled in the first quarter. Now, ordinarily, if consumers got a big tax cut, you see, if the tax cuts were for consumers, that would have given a big boost to retail sales. People really would have had more money or thinking they're going to have more money, therefore they would spend it. But they're not really seeing it because the tax cuts aren't about tax cuts for households. It's all about business tax cuts. So what we got is 0.2%, even with less tax withholding for households because of the transition in the tax bill, tax legislation. The tax withholding was reduced in the first quarter. So even with more income in their pocket, virtually no increase in retail sales. All right, so what about auto sales? Flat. Auto sales flat. Oh, well, wait a minute. You know, we see that there was an increase in auto sales. Well, that is really post-hurricane replacement going on. You know, the hurricanes last August, September, right? A lot of that was replacement. And of course, what we also got as the auto companies are trying to keep the train moving forward is a big discounting going on now for autos. Wait another year. You get good deals on autos another year. Construction spending? Well, what's happening there? Well, interest rates are rising fast, and they're going to continue to rise fast. It's already choking off the certain parts of the residential market, housing market. It's going to impact the rest of the construction industry as well here before the year end, because the Fed's going to raise rates three more times, they say. The Fed, Federal Reserve Bank, U.S. Central Bank, is on track to make the same mistake they made in 2007. And that is, they raised rates too fast, too high. And that precipitated the crash in the financial system in 2007-8. Precipitated. It didn't cause, it precipitated it. And they're doing it again. Now, it won't be a housing market crash. Clearly, the bubbles are not in the housing market. The bubble is in the stock and bond markets. That's where you'll see the crash. Probably the stock market first and bond markets, particularly high yield bond markets, soon after that. Okay, so construction spending as rates rise here is certainly going to be impacted this year. Auto sales are flat. Retail sales have declined 3 months in a row. They're flat. March jobs. Job creation in the U.S., only 100,000. You know, you need about 125,000, 150,000 a month to absorb new people coming into the labor market, right? Especially since a lot of people who left the labor market are coming back too. So it's going to be hard to absorb all those new people with only 100,000 jobs a month. Now, some of that's probably an overcorrection in the statistics to an overestimate in previous months of job creation. So we don't know if that's how much of a slowdown that is in job creation. Although we do know most of the jobs being created are part-time temp, low-paid jobs. We do know that. But you know, it's not a rosy picture. 1 month, we'll see what happens next month in the job picture either. And then there's talk about this trade war. What's the impact going to be of this trade war with China? Because that's a real emerging potential trade war, not the phony trade war with the rest of the world. Well, we'll talk about those two shortly here. All right, another indicator to watch is what's called the yield curve. What's the yield curve? The yield curve is the trajectory. Think of a line, the trajectory and long-term rates, meaning 10-year, 30-year bond rates, treasury bond rates, or corporate bond rates, and short-term rates, meaning two-year rates or bills, treasury bills, less than 2 years. When the short-term rates rise fast and the long-term rates do not rise, or maybe even begin to fall, the gap between the short-term and the long-term narrows, or they say the gap flattens, the curves flatten. Now, when you get an extreme version of this, where the short-term rates are rising fast and the long-term rates are falling and they cross each other, then you have what's called an inverted yield curve. Now, why is that important? Because an inverted yield curve, an even flattening yield curve, very flat, and there was no difference, not much gap between short and long term, is always associated with a recession. Always. It's a good predictor of recession. And what we got now is escalating short-term rates. You know, what the 10-year rate is 2.8% U.S. Treasury 10-year rate, but the 2-year rate is 2.4. And that was less than a half of 1%, about half of 1% difference between them. It's flattening. In other words, the yield curves, short and long, are flattening. And the direction is towards an inversion of them at some point. All right. So why is that important if they invert? Because long-term rates mean that the economic investors and community don't see a good, robust economy in the longer term, beyond a year. Right? They don't see it. They see the economy weakening in long term, whereas the Federal Reserve is driving up the short-term rates, making an error in doing so. Right? But nonetheless, the Fed, the central bank, can influence short-term rates, but has no influence over long-term rates. General economic conditions reflect that. The Fed believes, ever since Greenspan, that short-term rates will drive long-term rates. Well, that's not been the empirical case. The Fed has lost control even over short-term rate influence because of globalization, but it never had any control over long-term rates. And when the two rates invert, it means that the expectations of recession are coming, even though the Fed is raising when it shouldn't be, but it's raising anyway. So this is a reflection of investor confidence and income here, growth. And it's been flattening now. The yield curve, watch the yield curve. And more talk about this yield curve thing going on in the business press, because they're watching it and they say, oh, that's not a good indicator. You know, everyone's talking about a booming economy globally in the U.S., but wow, wait a minute. You know, the yield curve's not saying that. Right? And neither are retail sales or auto sales or construction spending or jobs. And on top of that, we have the possibility of trade war. Well, that's not a picture of a very robust future U.S. economy, is it? No. Well, how have we been keeping household spending consumption even going? Well, first of all, it's not because we've gotten wage increases. That's another lie out there. Only the top 10% of the labor force is getting wage increases. You see, they always state it as average increases. Well, average are pulled up by the skewed development at the high end. It looks like the average is going up. What matters is the median and below. That's where most wage owners are, and they're not getting wage increases. If you look at the government data, wage increases were at their peak in 2015-16 at 2%. Well, they're below 2%. They're like 1.7, 1.8 now in 2018. And probably going to go lower. Certainly real wages are going to go lower because now we got rising oil prices. You fill up your tank recently at the pump? Yeah, going up fast, huh? Well, the speculators see an opportunity now as they speculate and drive up global oil prices, and it's being passed on to you, the consumer. Well, that's going to reduce spending power here. For their household, American consumer in the household. And that means less spending on other real things. If you're going to spend more on gas, you're not going to buy other things. You're going to move your money around. Okay, so no real wage increase. Consumption, to the extent it's been occurring, is largely because of debt, household debt increase going on. Well, what's the picture in terms of household debt? Well, if you look at it, in 2013, household debt was about $12 trillion. Okay. Today, it's 13 and a half. Oh, no, excuse me. It was $11 trillion. And last year was, or what, in 2015, it was $12 trillion. Now it's 13 and a half trillion. In other words, in just 3 years, it's gone up $2.5 trillion from $11 trillion. A trillion to 13 and a half trillion. That's $800 billion a year in debt-based consumption. The only thing holding up the consumer is borrowing. There's no real wage increases. It's been borrowing, debt. And that's a very unstable basis for continued growth of consumer spending and retail sales, which we see is already weakening. Okay. All right. So it's all debt driven, right? It's all debt driven. And we got Fed rate hikes coming, which are going to cut into retail sales, big ticket retail sales, and business spending, already weakening in jobs and auto sales and retail sales, construction spending going to get whacked, and real spending going to get whacked. Well, and at the same time, the realization is going to hit business that the Trump bump, even though they're flush with all this cash from the tax cuts, they're not going to invest it in real expansion. They're going to put it in the financial markets, stock and bond markets, because that's where it's going, you see. Well, let's look at that, where the $5 trillion is actually going. Okay, I'm going to stop and catch my breath because I want to give you some figures here. Right? Last year, stock buybacks by U.S. corporations totaled $530 billion. Almost $500 billion was in dividend payouts. As I said before, ever since 2010, it's been $1 trillion a year in combined dividend payouts and stock buybacks. And that's continued and continued into the first year of Trump. But now we got the big Trump tax cuts. And what are the forecasts for stock buybacks and dividend payouts by Citibank and JP Morgan and so forth? What are their forecasts? Well, stock buybacks are estimated this year to be $800 billion. $800 billion. From $530 billion last year, now that they got the tax cut, $800 billion. So what does that mean? That $270 billion of the Trump tax cuts is going into stock buybacks? Well, certainly a big chunk of it's going into stock buybacks. All right. And what about dividends? Well, dividends will be over $500 billion a year this year. So we're talking about a combined stock buyback dividend payout of $1.3 trillion this year, $300 billion over what it's been for the last 6 years, every year annually. They're boosting their stock buybacks and dividend payouts. That's what they're doing. That's what's keeping the stock market going, you see, because 85% of the stock market is not retail investors. It's all institutional investors, corporations and shadow banks and banks and so forth. That's what's driving the stock market. And you're going to see the tech companies now under attack politically, and as a result of this global trade war in particular, are especially going to start buying back their stock to keep it up. So $1.3 trillion this year forecasted by the U.S. big bank research departments in stock buybacks and dividend payouts. U.S. corporate dividends, those companies that plan to increase their dividends this year, is now 71% of corporations plan to increase their dividends. That's up from 60% last year. In the European Union, the percentages are even greater. 75% last year planned to increase their dividend payouts in Europe. 83% plan to increase them this year. They're desperate to hold up their stock prices, you see. Well, what are the economic sectors who are the biggies in terms of planned dividend payouts? Banks, tech companies, health insurance companies, and energy companies. Those are the biggies, all double-digit increases in their dividend payouts coming this year. 2018 will be the year in which the greatest amount of dividends have been paid out in well over a decade, well over a decade. So the rate of this dividend payouts is increasing, and the rate of stock buybacks is increasing from a tremendous base of $1 trillion a year every year for 6 years. Well, they can't do that unless the government is giving them a big subsidy. The subsidy is called the tax cuts, you see. That's a direct subsidy. Improving the bottom line, estimates are, of corporations, the bottom profit line of 10 to 31%, 10 to 31% increase in their profit reporting on the bottom line. So they're giving it away in bushels full to their shareholders and dividends and stock buybacks. Okay. Now, there's another place this stock, this Trump tax is really going. Where's that? Mergers and acquisitions. You see, corporations 10 to 31% subsidy and windfall. A big portion goes to dividends and payouts, right? But another big portion of it is going to be used for mergers and acquisitions, buying up other companies, buying up their competitors. And where is this occurring? Well, last year, $1.2 trillion was committed to mergers and acquisitions. In the U.S., about $400 billion of that. So most of it's offshore, you see. U.S. corporations are buying up and buying into these corporations around the world. In 2018, the estimate for this year is $2 trillion in merger and M&A activity, from $1.2 trillion to $2 trillion. Now that's global, right? And most of that's offshore. Last year, the $1.2 trillion, about $300 to $400 billion was M&A in the U.S., with $800 billion outside the U.S. Well, this year, the $2 trillion, maybe $400 billion in the U.S., but $1.6 trillion M&A activity offshore. A lot of the money by corporations is going to buy up competitors and buy up production and deepen their position and invest in financial securities markets offshore. That's where a lot of it is going. Okay, so these big tax cuts cause big deficits and therefore debt, particularly for the U.S. government. The federal debt, which is about 4 to 5 trillion in 2000, ballooned to almost 10 trillion when Bush left office, George W., in 2008. And by the time Obama left office, it ballooned to another 9, to 19 trillion, almost 20 trillion. So, it's almost doubling every presidential 2 terms. Well, Trump comes in and he takes the 19, 20 trillion and he's going to blow up the U.S. deficit another $12.5 trillion, according to estimates, after 10 years. So we're gonna have by 2028, at minimum, a deficit and debt, a debt of $32, $33 trillion, from $21 trillion now to $33 trillion. And that's assuming there's not going to be a recession at all in the next eight years. Well, of course there's going to be a recession, or 10 years. Of course there's going to be. We're already at the, typically recessions occur every 7 to 9 years. We're already in the eighth year since the last one. You're telling me we're not going to have a recession in the next 10 years? Well, of course we will. And that means that the government deficits and debt will balloon even more. It could be $35 to $40 trillion in U.S. government debt. Where are they going to get that money from? Well, the Federal Reserve is going to have to raise their rates, right? Going to have to raise their interest rates in order to fund that deficit and that debt. They're going to have to raise the rates. Now, are they going to, how high are they going to raise it to attract funds, foreign funds, to cover the deficit? Well, to cover the deficit and the debt, they're going to slow down the U.S. economy, which means tax revenues are going to slow down and the deficit debt's going to grow even more. They're between a rock and a hard place. They're stuck. Okay. Very interesting contradiction there, isn't it? Well, the IMF recently came out with a report that showed global debt was at $164 trillion globally. Now, the U.S. Is about 70 trillion. We increased our total debt from government, private, and household from 50 trillion in 2008 to 70 trillion, or 2009, excuse me, at the end of the recession. We increased to $20 trillion. That's 70 trillion. So the U.S. is, like 40% of the global debt. And the other biggies in debt are China, of course, and Japan. And Europe not far behind. So the whole system is running on debt, you see. The whole recovery has been at the expense of accumulation of further debt. It's not real growth. It's debt-driven growth to the extent there is any growth. And, of course, the Trump deficits, I mean, the Trump tax cuts are a huge contributor to this rising U.S. total debt. Huge. Because they don't result in real economic stimulus and growth, they result in boosting financial asset markets and dividend payouts and flowing out to the rest of the world economy, which borrows the money and their debt rises too, you see. It's a debt-driven system in the 21st century. It's on very shaky ground, because at some point, that debt's going to have to be repaid. And if we have a recession, the income generated to pay the principal and interest on that debt will decline, collapse. And if you can't pay that debt, make those payments, you default. And if you default, fear and contagion spreads throughout all the financial markets. And when that spreads, bank lending dries up and the rest of the economy follows the collapse. And that's the trajectory we're heading for once again. Well, that was the topic I described in my book, Systemic Fragility in the Global Economy. Even now, mainstream economists are talking about, oh, wait a minute, fragility is real. I'm referring here to Martin Wolf of the Financial Times, a big feature article here on April 18th this week. Times are good now, but the fragility is real. Yeah, even Martin knows it, right? Martin knows it. He says we are facing a crisis of the system, right? Things may look good now, but they always look good before the storm, you see, because they really aren't that good. So the IMF, the U.S., of course, has grown its debt from 50 to 70 trillion, but the IMF debt pile of 164 trillion now amounts to 225% of global GDP. The debt is growing faster than the real economy. That's the big contradiction. They're pumping more and more debt into the system and getting less and less real growth for it. Capitalism is in trouble in the 21st century. You don't, may not see it really clearly, but below the surface, the forces at work are such that it can't and it isn't sustaining itself, the growth, as it used to be in previous decades. It's relying more and more on debt in order to maintain the growth. And as the debt grows, they got to do more tax cuts in order to stimulate it. Well, that leads to more government debt, you see. And the private sector is taking on more and more debt because the central banks have kept interest rates too low to try to keep things going. So the central bank grows in terms of debt that it's holding, and the federal government grows in debt. Well, what that means is that the central bank is monetary policy. The central banks are assuming more and more debt to try to stimulate the economy through monetary policy. At the same time, the federal government, fiscal policy, taxes and spending, is incurring more and more debt, in order to try to stimulate the real economy. So both fiscal and monetary policy are increasingly debt-driven and increasingly ineffective in stimulating the real economy. That's why you see this government debt and the private debt and central bank debt growing just to keep the system from re-collapsing. This is an important development. Look below the surface, and long term, it's not as rosy a picture as looking at the short term and assuming that there's more growth than there actually is. Well, the IMF has said to the United States, it says, please, please take back some of those tax cuts, right? Because your debt is out of control. It's going to be out of control. Well, Trump doesn't care. He just wants to give his buddies and himself more money. You see, they're not very good stewards of their own system anymore. The quality of the leadership in the capitalist economies is really declined. I mean, look at the U.S. Look at who we've produced as leadership who are supposed to be stewards of the economy, right? Trump to begin with, Obama, you know, Mr. Do-Nothing, had a great opportunity, historical opportunity, blew it. Could have been an FDR, you know, but he didn't want to shake the tree. And then George W. Bush, you know, another yahoo. And then, you know, slippery Bill Clinton. Wow. You know, look who we've had up there in the last 25 years. And the Congress is the same. You know, you got all these crazy right-wingers, conservative radicals who believe in libertarian nonsense. They actually believe that. And there are so many stupid people in Congress, I can't believe it, right? Especially in the House. Look at the quality. And they're wrecking their own system. And, of course, professional economists have no solutions to it because their models no longer work in the 21st century. Okay, so that's our picture here of our updates on taxes and the economy. Well, the trade situation is the same. You see, this trade war with China, there's no trade war with the rest of the world. It's a phony trade war. It's a token trade war. It's a trade war that Trump, with his steel and aluminum tariffs, you know, he announces them, and then he exempts everybody from them. He exempts Korea from them and Brazil and Canada. They're the major steel importers of the United States, right? And he exempts the aluminum. That's Canada. 43% of all aluminum imports come from Canada. Well, they're exempt, right? So he talks big, makes it look like he's taking on the world, but all he wants is token adjustments to trade relationships with the rest of the world that he can then hype and exaggerate and lie about to his base, because this trade war, general trade war, phony trade war, is all about mobilizing his base before the November 2018, talking like he's an economic nationalist, you see. But the reality will be very token changes that he'll hype and exaggerate and lie about. The real war, trade war, is coming with China. And that's being driven for military reasons, you see. The real objective for the U.S. is to stop China, to blunt China technology transfer from U.S. corporations, because China is now a major technology threat to the United States. The next wars will not be fought the way the traditional wars are. The next wars will be based on technology. It'll be based on 5G wireless, on artificial intelligence, on cybersecurity. And the Chinese are moving very fast in that direction, very fast, filing as many patents as the United States. And the U.S. is worried, and they're trying to come up with a strategy to slow that down. So it's military. Military is behind the whole picture here. And that's the real objective in the trade war with China. The trade war with China is real, but the rest of the world trade war is phony. But, you know, if there's going to be a trade war, then what you got is a rising U.S. trade deficit. is going to ensue in the short run, and that's going to slow the economy, and that's going to offset the Trump stimulus from fiscal policy as well. So we got trade policy and monetary central bank policy going to negate what little stimulus there is from the Trump tax cuts on the real economy. And that's the picture going forward. Okay, we'll just conclude at that a little bit earlier here today. You listen to some music here. And next week, I'm sure we'll have some new news. But that's the update on the Trump tax cuts and the Trump trade war. Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Streets are screaming now.